Hello, everyone. My name is Kayla.
And I'm Steph, and welcome to the Witch Story Podcast.
Before we begin this episode of Witch Story, I just want to welcome everyone to 2022. Hope everyone has had a wonderful holiday season. Today, we are going to go back in time 400 years to talk about a witch trial that took place to Germany's first female postmaster.
Katharina Hennot was born around the year 1570 in Köln, otherwise known as Cologne in English. There was actually a movie about her called Die Hexe von Köln that was actually made in 1989. Her mother, Adelheid de Hen, was a Dutch noble woman, and her father, Jacob, started off as a silk dyer, but became a successful merchant for the Genoese trading company called Garibaldi. They came from an obviously wealthy family who valued education and intellectual work for the children. We're unsure about how many children were in the family, but there was for sure a sister named Wilhelmina who joined the monastery of St. Clara, a brother named Everhard who became a doctor of theology and was the dean in St. Cunibert, and a brother named Hage. Hage was the oldest, and he is pretty important to the story. He was also very successful as the Doctor of Laws, Cone Canon, Decan of the Pen Sanct Andreas, Provost of the Severin Pen, Imperial and Electoral Council, and Apostolic Prothonotary.
Okay, I don't know half those words, but like the fact that you said those, damn. Okay, and the fact that he was those,
damn.
Also damn.
Fuck. But those are the only siblings we're sure of. There may be more. So back to the father. After a good career as a silk merchant, he was granted citizenship of Köln in 1576. Jacob got into working for the country's postal system and reorganized the structure of the postal offices. When Katharina married, her husband ended up assisting her father in the job. In 1623, when the father was 91 and the husband had presumably since passed away, Katharina took over as the postmaster of the city of Köln with her brother because she's a boss ass bitch.
Yeah, and it was mainly her, like her brother assisted, but like she was the first female postmaster. So when doing the research, this is where the story kind of like gets a little, like every single source has its own take on it, and you can pick or choose whatever you believe to be the truth. There's no way of knowing. So it was thought that sometime after Katharina took the position of postmaster, her father passed away, which makes sense seeing as on November 17th, 1625, he would have been 94 years old. But because of his passing, like I said, he gained a few years before that, like citizenship in Köln. I don't know exactly to the extent, but I don't think they had their full citizenship or a license to be there. So they were scared that once he died, that they'd have to leave or something. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So they did something sketchy, which, you know, I haven't been in this position, so I'm not one to judge, but they hid the fact that he died and kept going on doing the post service and everything and forging his signatures when needed. If they didn't do this, the post was to be given to this Prince of Taxis dude who we hate. But even though even though the Hennots or Hennots, the family last name, they were deemed to be the heirs of the post by Emperor Ferdinand II, who reigned years earlier. So at the time that that emperor was reigning, he was just like, yeah, you're the rightful heir. But since that person's gone, the father is gone, it was supposed to be the Prince of Taxis. And they were like, we're not giving up our post to this man's. After a couple months had passed, they ended up being caught forging their dad's signatures. And the father's adversary actually wanted to take advantage of the situation and take the post from Katharina to establish a central post system. Basically, he no longer wanted individual town post offices. And Katharina was just like, hell nah, let's go to court.
It's mine. Yeah.
Yeah. Which, like, good. Like, you know, any person would fight for it if they had the money to go to court. And she was very vocal about how she felt about not wanting to give up her position. And I think that she was actually good at her job, you know, like the fact that the brother didn't do it and she did it and they were okay with her doing it for so long. Like she must have been.
She was given like the job as postmaster too. That means like you were already raised and trained to do this job. You were selected rather than the son. Like, I think that that's a huge deal for back then, especially.
Yeah. And her being, like you said, the intellectual, mm-hmm. the like educational, like go-getter person that she is. Yeah. Fight for it. So she wrote a letter to the Archbishop, one Ferdinand of Bavaria, and denied everything and asked that he check on everything to see for himself. And if things were not right, if she had to go to court, to at least let it be the clerical high court instead of the Supreme Court. And she asked this because she knows that if she was found guilty at the smaller claims court, then her punishment would be less severe, obviously. She also wrote this letter because she knew the Archbishop personally. I think her or her family had lent him a huge lump sum of money earlier. So she thought that, like, you know, I help you out, you help me out, do a favor for me. But obviously, that's not how things worked for Katerina. And she was taken to the higher court knowing that her punishment would be extreme. She tried to get herself out of this mess. She talked to her defense lawyer and her brother, and they planned something called the purgation process, which means that she would be allowed to swear herself free from the accusations, which I know that doesn't really make sense. But anyways, the process to do this was super slow and nobody actually wanted to help with it. I think you need to get a lot of people involved, a lot of time, a lot of money. And so while waiting for this process in 1627, she was, surprise, charged and arrested with witchcraft super randomly.
Gee, I wonder why.
Educated women in the 1600s?
What?
No way.
Yeah, are you kidding me?
You're a witch. Not only that, but she was put straight to prison and denied a lawyer, visitors, or medical aid, which is actually uncommon. Like, you know, even though you're put into prison for being a witch, you still had some rights, usually, yeah. Not usually, very rarely, but like sometimes you get rights.
Federally, yes.
Yeah.
Municipally, no.
And yeah, so there were a lot of petitions to get her out by her family, but none were taken seriously. Her brother also tried to like bail her out with a large sum of money, but he was just flat out denied. Yeah. Her charges were harmful magic, resulting in the death of 5 people, harmful magic in nature, feeding dispute, magical practices, divination, specifically with a divination rod, and sex with a devil. Yeah, now these were rumors by some nuns from the convent Sankt Clara that her sister, as we mentioned earlier, and her now daughter, Anna Maria, lived at. And there was also a confession extracted from another alleged witch during a random, I guess, an exorcism that they had. And these nuns had absolutely no reason to be saying anything bad about her because Katerina was very, very well respected and had donated so much money throughout her life to this church. And then all of a sudden they just throw her under the bus. So that's really upsetting.
I was looking into divination rods.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I just wanted to touch on that. So divination rods, otherwise known as dowsing, is a type of pseudoscientific divination employed in attempts to locate groundwater, buried metals or ores, gemstones, oil, grave sites, malign earth vibrations, and many other objects and materials without the use of a scientific apparatus. So how is this a crime? I'm sorry.
Yeah, so I can actually answer to this. So it's generally used now by hobbyists, but yes, it is still used today. So you have basically in each hand these large metal rods that look like just oversized Allen keys, like they're bent. And then the long part sticks out and you're holding the short end of the let's say the Allen key. And basically, it kind of like moves around in your hand and you're finding water. My friend's sister actually does this and is fairly successful with finding groundwater, which is crazy because it is a pseudoscience.
Exactly. I don't understand how this is a crime because you're just finding water. Like, what is...
I think when we're thinking, oh, how is this used, you know, as divination, because they're called divination rods, there you can do kind of a thing as you do with, let's say, a pendulum or maybe a Ouija board, where you can put them one in each hand and like call out to a spirit or a demon and ask where they are, if they're here, if these are the crossroads, you know, if this is a sacred place, and they'll probably move in your hands. But then again, people, you can just say the person is moving it themselves. But if you truly believe in this, or if you're scared that somebody else can conjure something up with these divination rods, then yeah, it was seen as a bad thing to do. But generally it's for finding groundwater, maybe metals and stuff. So for divination, you would probably say, you know, turn to the left for yes, turn to the right for no, cross over if you're evil or something.
At the end of the day, they're just rods, the metal rods or sticks,
and they're rods that look like a wishbone. So like, it's one in each hand that are connected at the end, and they're longer.
Yeah,
witchcraft.
Moving on.
Well, hey, if any of our listeners do this and are successful with dousing, let us know, because I'd really like to hear about this. But back to our story, and this is actually the most upsetting part to me. And it's during the time that Katharina was locked up. Actually, I'm just going to give a whole disclaimer. If you're not into gore, skip the next 2 minutes, because she was trying to send letters to her brother and managed to send 2 letters to her brother, because you're allowed to send mail and receive mail. But when it was written, it was super, super messy and clearly written with her left hand, or she might have said, this is written with my left hand. And this is because the amount of torture that she was probably put through, that she couldn't even use her right hand. And when I say this is upsetting, you know, it's not in the records what methods of torture was used on her, but she might not have even had her hand left to write with at this point. In the letters to her brother, she wrote about many things, including what she was experiencing in prison, the torture she was going through, her claiming her own innocence still, and giving names of witnesses that could prove her innocence that she asked her brother to possibly reach out to. But she received no answer, as she was probably blocked from receiving letters. Normally, torture is allowed to be done to an accused person 3 times, but since it was all very secretive, we don't know how many times she was tortured and how bad it was. Generally, what would happen after 3 rounds of torture is, if you were to have maintained your innocence, you should have been let go. But that was clearly not the case here, and is clearly not the case with a lot of witch trials. Now, this whole time, her brother was painstakingly fighting for her. And normally in this area and time, for a witch to be deemed guilty, they would have to confess. And Katharina, girl boss, certainly did not confess. She was not a witch. And it seems that every quote-unquote fair aspect of this trial was just taken away from her. And it did not go into her favor, which is why we're sitting here talking about her today. On May 19th, 1627, in Köln, at the Melaton Farm execution site, she was hanged in front of a large crowd, guilty of witchcraft, and her remains were then burned after at the stake. I'm gonna get more into the aftermath in just a second, but I actually really want to talk about this Melaton Farm execution site in Köln, which was also called Rabenstein. It is so messed up, like so messed up. I think I'm actually gonna post a picture of the
site or of some information about it on Instagram, because
yeah, you should. It's a good
yeah. Thing. And I'll add the link as well. But this was a huge area on the side of the city. And when reading about it, they literally built up a roundabout just so more people can watch the executions that were happening. Because they were like,
this is getting a lot of attention.
Like so, gladiators or something.
Yeah, it was like a theater site.
Yeah.
And then close by, they dug out a massive pit. So they just had like a pit to burn the bodies. And it was used from 1285 all the way to 1797. That's a long ass time.
Pit must have turned into quite the hill then.
Oh God. And the smell probably. Like, this place had so many deaths. And it wasn't just witches and crime. They also buried all the people who had leprosy here. It was so messed up. I wonder if it was even used as a farm in the end. Probably just like, honestly, this is a body farm.
Oh,
yeah.
Bad image. It's a bad image.
Yeah. So yeah, as I said, her poor brother, Harker. I'm sorry. You said this name so, you pronounce it so perfectly.
Thank you.
Harker.
Poor brother Harker tried to fight so hard after for her innocence, even after she passed away, because he knew she was innocent and he knew that it was wrong, that all her rights were taken from her from the trial and it was unfair, and he just wanted to do justice. So he actually resigned from all his religious duties, which is, whoa, you don't do that back then, and asked to see the records of the trial. And this is where it gets weird again, because usually from a trial, especially something this big for witchcraft, they're very meticulously recorded. Even back then, they would have been hundreds of pages, you know, with detailed accounts of everything that happened, and they would have kept all
for a long time. Everything, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So let's say there was 300 pages. Harker only received random pages like pages 3, 18, and 87, which had nothing to actually do with her guilt or the evidence against her, if she was innocent or guilty. They were just very random pages, like what she ate in her cell on a Monday or something like that. So he was not allowed to see the full trial records to even help her. This had no significance to proving her innocence. And like most old records, we can't study them today because they haven't lasted through history. So after this, unfortunately, Harker too passed away a few years later in 1631.
Mm-hmm.
Today, Katerina's trial is known locally as the Henot trial, or the Henot trial, her last name. And it was the first of the larger witch hunt, which I know many people that study witchcraft and witch hunts might recognize as the Cologne or Köln witch hunts, which took place between 1627 and 1630. So this kind of triggered it to begin. And at the same site, that Melaton farm site that she was hanged at, 30 more witches died in the 17th century. This might be a topic that we can talk about in a future episode, but I just want to also say that Katerina's own sister, Wilhelmine, that we mentioned from the convent, was also accused of witchcraft in January of 1627.
From a convent, like, seriously.
Yeah. Well, I think that's actually common because,
well, yeah,
with the exorcisms, I mean, and
still, like, it boggles my mind a little bit where, like, some women, yes, like, they're forced to go into a convent, but some choose to be there, and yet they're still accused of being a witch, even though a witch back then was, like, literally the exact opposite of a nun in a convent. So it's just odd to me.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, there's nothing really happy with most witch trial cases. I guess now in memory, you know, looking back, they put a statue to commemorate her in the side of the Köln Town Hall. I think in, was it 1989?
Marie-Anne Ludeke, I'm probably saying that last name wrong, made a sculpture of her that appears there. And there's also a street in school now named after her. So now looking back, like, yes, we're trying to commemorate these women and give them justice. But at the time, no happy ending. Keep in mind, this trial was 400 years ago now, and her descendants finally got her and 37 other falsely accused witches exonerated in June 28th of 2012 with help from the city council. 400 years!
They were greedy and she had power. They didn't like that and they wanted to take away from her, and this was the way to do it, and somehow they won.
So. I wonder though, you know, like what if she, I know there have been male witches, but like in this case, what if she were a man? Like this.
Obviously it wouldn't really happen. I mean, there are plenty of male postmasters, and it wouldn't be a problem. So I don't know. She did have great influence. Like I know that people looked up to her and stuff like that. So think that was another reason that other people would want to take her down, especially other women. Like, not that I know this, this isn't historical fact because there's no like sources that can guarantee this, but what I will say is that it's so important for women to support each other, because if they're in competition with one another, in this case she was influential and she had a very good position not only with her employment but in society, women were jealous of her. They could just take her down and never have to deal with her again. So I feel like this still happens today, maybe not to this extent, sometimes yes, sometimes no.
Super random, but I saw like that there's this one post that's just like women putting down other women or being jealous of other women. It's chuggy, like it's 2021, we stand up for each other now. And I was just like, yes.
Yeah, but it's so important because this stuff still happens. It still happens. It's just annoying and petty, and I'm really tired of it. And like you see back then in historical documents and in trial documents and things like that, like, yes, like you can't really prove it because you'll never know the actual thoughts of that person back then. But that is clearly their intention. A lot of the time it's another woman's intention to bring somebody else down because they just don't want to deal with them anymore, because they're tired of competition and because they want to be either desired or they just want to be a better part of society and they don't want to have somebody be better than them. And yeah, it just shouldn't happen. And that, yeah. I think that that's clearly what happened in this case. And it's what happens in a lot of cases. There are a lot of cases where there are women that are said to be attractive, and either men or women will accuse them of being a witch and take them down purposely because of that, because they had something that they didn't have.
And I know you're saying that sometimes it's women against women, but for the predominant part, we don't want to take away from the fact that witchcraft and witches being killed, and mostly women that are being killed, is because of misogyny. And all these men who think they're doing good by being a witch hunter, like, they're just men who hate women specifically. So yeah, stand up for each other, girls. We need that.
Yes, that's it for our trial.
I had said it like that.
Wine. Yeah, I had some wine, and sometimes I can be more passionate about things when I have wine.
So. Yeah, we need that. We need that girl standing up for girl. Yeah.
For this episode, all of our sources will be linked in the description. We just want to say thank you again for listening. Please don't forget to rate and subscribe to our podcast. It really helps us a lot. And if you want to send us a message, feel free to email us at witchstorypodcast@gmail.com and follow us on social media. We're on Twitter and Instagram at witchstorypod. We hope you tune back for our next episode. Bye, and thank you, everyone.